Welcome to Inflection Point Podcast, where our mantra is cultivating change from the inside out. Join your hosts, Anita Russell, Mavis Bauman, and Gail Hunter, as we create a brave space for conversations about racism, personal transformation, and accountability. Conversation provides a means to dive deeply into your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs, and examine what emerges in your words, actions, and behaviors. The show is a journey towards anti-racism by cultivating change within yourself first and then out into the world. Learn to engage in racial dialogue using four tools: courage, conversation, relationship, and accountability. Discover how truth, reconciliation, and healing can emerge from honest and deliberate conversations. Manifest social change right now on Inflection Point Podcast. Well, hello, hello, Inflection Point Podcast listeners, and welcome to the newest episode of our show. I am your host, Anita Russell, and here's a quick hello from the co-hosts, Mavis and Gail.
Hello, I'm Mavis Bauman. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Gail Hunter, and thanks for being here.
So, we do what we normally do. We're going to tell you what the topic is, and we have a specific question that we're going to be delving into. And we have a very special guest that I'm going to introduce. So the topic for our discussion is fighting for freedom denied, military transition. And the central question is, how do discriminatory employment practices impact the transition from the military into the civilian sector? And we are so fortunate to have someone who is an expert in that, who can speak directly to that based on her profession, but also based on some personal experiences. So I'd like to introduce J.K. Bridges. She is a federal recruiter, a corporate recruiter, she's involved in senior talent acquisition, and she's a diversity, equity, and inclusion champion. So I'm going to read a little bit of her bio just to give you some more of her background. She is a 20 plus year professional in human resources and talent acquisition, with a broad knowledge in policy and resources in the public sector, state government, and federal civilian contract recruiting. She has been employed as a corporate tech recruiter. She has been a senior recruiter, a recruiting manager, a consultant, an area trainer, district trainer, and so on and so on. So she's got the expertise, and she's going to be sharing some of that with us. So some of her highlights include delivering more than 600 presentations and trainings to cross-functional staff in employee relations, performance management, diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I'm just going to turn it over to JK at this point. And what I'd like you to do is kind of give us a little bit more detail on who you are, and then tell your personal story of your connection to the military.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. It is such a pleasure and equally an honor to be here and serve as a guest today. So again, I am J.K. Bridges. I am a military spouse, and my spouse served right at 31 years total. Of those 31 years, I had the good fortune to be a part of that career, just a bit over 24 of those years. And in doing so, that is why I personally became an advocate for the military family. And when I say military, meaning transitioning military personnel, persons that is within 6 to 8 months of exiting out of the military, as well as military spouses such as myself because of some experiences that I encountered in the early years of my career, and then our military veterans. So for those three aforementioned reasons, that is why I have over the years really been a hard-bound, I guess you can say, foot-tapping advocate on behalf of that demographic, simply because of the roadblocks and the hurdles that still exist today.
Seems that we're having a little bit of technical difficulty, so I just want to make sure, are you able to hear me okay now? Because it seemed like there was not have air conditioning or anything going. So you all can hear me perfectly.
Now you're fine. You're fine.
Okay. Yes. Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
And I hear you well. Hopefully no one is having difficulties hearing me.
No, you're fine. You're good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. It seems like the problem was on my end. So I'm glad we got that resolved. So for the first part of our discussion, I'd like to talk about really this idea of military spouses, because until I met you, if you remember when we had that initial conversation, never occurred to me that there may be some issues related to military spouses when it comes to employment in the civilian sector. And then the other thing that you had mentioned was this whole idea of kind of transitioning out of the military and some of the issues that military personnel will run into. So we could talk about that, your personal experience as a military spouse, and then that whole transition for military service veterans and all that.
Absolutely. So I will start from my own personal experiences first. As I alluded to a moment ago, in the early years of my career, you know, I was building my career, you know, getting my foot in the door. And there were many instances where I would apply, you know, and of course, during that time, that was kind of when cover letters was like the it thing to always include on there. And, you know, being a young wife and definitely at the time, a young mother coming back into the workforce, I found it imperative to share what were some of the reasons as to why at that time there were some gaps in my career. And there was two reasons why. The first and foremost reason was because I had taken some time off, you know, to rear our family. And then, but the children at that time was getting of age, you know, where I could go back into the workforce. And then two, you know, there had been some gaps simply because of where we have been deployed, you know, and unfortunately you have to kind of leave a job because sometimes you're not able to continue to remain in that same profession depending on where you are, you know, stationed at. And so I personally encountered situations where there were companies, and I, out of respect, I'm not going to name drop at this time, but, you know, there were companies that were bold enough 20 plus, almost 30 years ago, that would flat out say, I'm not going to hire you because you're a military spouse, because the fallacy and the miseducation that is purported out there is that if you are a military spouse, you're not going to be there long. Oh, you're only going to be there a year, 2 years, et cetera. And that's absolutely not the case. And sadly, here we are 30 years later, and I have very close relationships with many military spouses, you know, especially the more young and up and coming ones. I'm a part of many military spouse groups and organizations. And believe it or not, that story still exists. Those experiences are still going on today. So for me, being someone that's in human resources and talent acquisition, I found it as my personal mission to make sure that I do everything I can to educate my fellow counterparts, you know, to let them know, give these individuals a chance, make sure you fully understand, you know, the full picture of what it means to be a military spouse. Yes. Are there going to be occasions where we as a military spouse will have to uproot and leave? Absolutely. But that is not a sufficient nor a justifiable reason to not hire that individual. Because again, if you're trying to fill that role, the whole purpose of filling that position is hiring the most qualified candidate. And we as military spouses, we're highly regarded. We are educated. We have the skill set. And so somewhere along the way, I think that corporate America had began to assume that if you are a military spouse, you don't have the talent, you don't have the skills, and you certainly don't have the education, which, of course, if anybody knew anything about the military, we're probably one of the more educated demographics that is out there, because being a military spouse, it makes you eligible for the GI Bill, which we fall under what they call DEA, Dependent Education Assistance Program. So there are funds that is set aside specifically for military spouses to go back and get our education. I took advantage of the example. Speaking in reference of those transitioning, Anita, transition military is any one person that is within 6 to 8 months of getting out of the military. What is that the United States military, no matter what branch of service you're in, they grant you that leeway, that lead, what we call a lead period, to allow the individuals to transition into the civilian sector. And the reason for that is because there more than 75% of the military community are career military personnel. Career personnel, meaning the only job that these individuals have had, probably other than when they was in high school, was the military. And so being in the military is quite different than employing in the civilian sector. Still yet a humble breeding ground where you can blend, and I do mean seamlessly, blend the two worlds together as long as you know the lingo, know the language, understand, you know, the breakdown in terms of the military. And so if you think about it, the military is an entire organization within itself. So for every entity that exists in the civilian sector, equally that same industry exists in the military, meaning we have hospitality in the military. We don't call it hospitality, but it's a thing where we have people that handle lodging, we have logistics and supply, we have medical. So all these other professions that is common within the civilian sector equally exist within the military. And that is where we as professionals within the talent acquisition industry or profession, shall I say, we really have to get better at what we're doing, because we should not be 30 years later and not understanding how these talents and these skills can translate to many of the open roles that exist today.
That is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that really popped out at me when you were talking specifically about the spouses is this assumption that the education, the experience is on the low side. So it made me wonder, what is it about a military spouse specifically that kind of feeds into, or not even about the military spouse themselves, but what is it about the system that kind of feeds into this idea that a person who is a military spouse is, for lack of a better term, underqualified for the type of positions that we may have to offer, but it's based on an assumption of being underqualified.
Is it about qualifications or time? Time that the person
can time was a big issue.
You know, I would have to say, Mavis, and that's a great question. I'm inclined to say it goes two things. Yes, the professional expertise, because if you are a military spouse, sometimes, you know, it will appear that you've, you know, only been on a job 2 years here, 3 years here, et cetera, et cetera. However, though, that does not take away that person's educational background. And so the second part of that, a lot of that still stems from military spouses from the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, where that was the age group, if you think about it, that was more of the homemakers by tradition. Mm-hmm. But as we all know, that quickly began to change in the late 60s and definitely by the time we hit the mid 70s. And so, unfortunately, for a lot of that good old boy mentality to still exist, you know, sometimes it makes you really beg the question, is that image and is that philosophy still out there intentionally? Because mm-hmm. clearly people have to know that we as women, we're no longer just stay at home anymore.
Right.
You know, that has long ago changed. Not mm-hmm. to say that that doesn't still exist, but I'm a classic example. You know, my husband and I, we made the mutual decision that, you know, I would be home 5 to 6 years with our children for more reasons than one. And then I returned to the workforce, and I've been in the workforce ever since. So there's many other individuals that choose to do the same thing or something similar. Mm-hmm. I've known for some wives, they'll wait until the children is a little bit older, 7, 8, even 10 years old. But they, in the meantime, they were still doing quality things that is a skill set, such as, number one, you're maintaining a household. So you're the CEO. You're doing bookkeeping. You're paying the bills. You're handling accounting. You know, you're doing supply logistics because you're having to coordinate going to the grocery store and get the meals and prepare the meals. You know, you're all those things fall under there. But in addition to that, we are still doing things outside the home. For instance, we're doing a lot of volunteer work at our children's schools where we're part of the PTA. Now, these are skills that is easily available and able to be incorporated into a resume. And that is why when I have the opportunity to speak to the various military spouses, I make sure that he or she, because that's another thing, people need to realize that a military spouse is not just a female. You know, because what if the person in the military is a female, but their husband is a stay-at-home parent? So we need to recognize and respect those type of positions in the titles and get a full understanding of the breakdown when it comes to the military family. And sadly, a lot of people, they allude to the fact that they're familiar with the military when in actuality, they really are not.
Yeah, that's really interesting, that whole entire sort of old school genderized way, assuming that this is how all of this, actually works. So I want to thank you for sharing all of that information. And then one of the other things that you had talked about was this idea of translating certain things or certain terms or certain ways of thinking from the military perspective into the civilian perspective. And so how that transition actually can be problematic for people.
Correct. So what that means is, for instance, in the military, you know, there are different job titles that you may have. And so oftentimes, you know, a person may have a career where they've done nothing but, let's say, artillery. You know, artillery is dealing with, you know, anything from weaponry to all the way down to, you know, tanks and missiles, et cetera. And so now that's where it requires the person themselves, you know, the military personnel to be able to know how to go in and, you know, soften that resume up so that the verbiage that they use can translate into the civilian sector. Now, there's only a certain degree of information that they can change up. Let's be honest about that. And that's where, again, the burden is on us as professionals, you know, talent acquisition professionals, being able to understand and read that resume, you know, to be able to see, okay, this person was in artillery. How many years were they in artillery? Okay, so that lets us know they're a dedicated employee. Then you got to look at, okay, what did they do while they was in artillery? You know, were they in leadership? If they were, now you see they got the skills to lead. You know, they qualify, you know, for a position to be a team leader or a supervisor in the civilian sector. Mm-hmm. And then not only for that, this person, you know, had great accountability, meaning they had a lot of responsibility that fell for that. You know, they had to be organized. And the list just goes on and on. So when you really think about it, that's where it goes back to say, a person really need to take the time to really understand the different professions that exist within the military community that is equal or equivalent to what exists in the civilian sector. And the last example that I will give is lodging. Oftentimes in the military, we use the term lodging. Lodging is basically another term for us. If we was in the civilian sector, that would equate to hospitality, meaning you know, like hotels. So if a person wanted to apply, let's say with a job of Hilton or Hampton, et cetera, now they can take that same skill set that they did in the military and be able to apply for those same roles within the civilian sector, because you have to do the same thing. You're having to maintain that database. You're responsible for making sure that once those individuals, you know, check in for lodging, that they're comfortable, that they have all the things that they need. Are they in the correct room? If there's an issue with the room, are you taking care of that room within a timely fashion? So the same components that go into a civilian role equally goes into when they're in the military and vice versa.
It's so crucial. If somebody can't interpret those skills, what happens, right? They would, even though the person themselves would have to be able to, right? How many people have access to you that are leaving the military and then are looking for a job skill? Because without that, they'd be really lost. I mean,
you're absolutely correct. And that's actually why we have so many persons that's affiliated with the military, all the way from military spouses to transitioning military personnel to definitely our fellow veteran demographic. Sadly, you know, that is still the lingering factor there. And, you know, there's a number of reasons for that. As I mentioned before, and I cannot say it enough, a lot of it is because of the lack of education. And when I say lack of education, meaning on the human resources and talent acquisition side, you know, the professionals have not taken the time to properly educate him or herself. And so that's why it's crucial to make sure that we are understanding that. And then, you know, sadly, the other piece of that I've seen, Mavis and Anita and Gail, is the fact that you have a lot of employers, or shall I say hiring managers, that work for these various employers. They have this bias towards military people and saying, oh, well, you know, I don't want to hire somebody that's military because, you know, they're staunch, they're strict. Well, yes, to a certain degree, they are, because you got to look at the environment that they've come from. But my rebuttal to that is like this. If you take someone that's been employed, let's say with Wells Fargo or the Bank of America's, and that person has employed there for 15, 20 years, if you think about it, that person now have immersed themselves in the culture and the dichotomy of that company. So if they opt to leave, let's say because of a layoff or whatever the case may be, and now they go employ with another organization, and let's say now they're suddenly with Verizon, I'm just throwing a name out there, then don't you think that they're going to probably take some of that same mindset from what they learned at Wells Fargo and Bank of America over with them to Verizon? And so the same thing with the military. And sadly, you know, the military, for some reason, tend to scare people. And then the third and final reason, then I'll hush a little bit, is that, you know, the military has gotten a bad reputation because of PTSD. But again, my fellow colleagues, that's where I do my best to educate them and let people know that even though some of those individuals may have that diagnosis, you cannot hold that against them, because that's basically a form of discrimination, because PTSD protects them under U.S. labor disability laws. So you have those things like that where people need to really properly educate his or herself and not necessarily withhold an individual at bay, all because of the things that he or she don't know. And when I say he or she don't know, I'm strictly referring to, you know, the talent acquisition community.
Mm-hmm. Yes, most people meeting somebody wouldn't even know that they may have PTSD. And so, but you're right. It gives that fear that, what does that mean? And how is that going to play out if we hire this person? And it really is needed. What's needed is more education. That's right.
Of course. And then again, it's the assumptions that's made, because, you know, not to say that many of our military personnel don't suffer from PTSD, and PTSD is indeed something very serious that we do have to take, you know, into account, but it's not something that will hold a person back from successfully doing his or her job. I myself is identified as a disabled person. I have suffered from what's called debilitating migraines ever since the age of 17. And as I've gotten older in life, my migraines have been progressively worse. I mean, there are just some days I cannot function. I mean, the pain is so severe, it's all the way down into my eyes, you know, and light is sensitive. So if I'm trying to work on a computer, I wouldn't be able to work that day. I literally have to take a mental health day for, you know, when I do have the onset of those migraines. And then because of the medication that I take, I have two prescription medications that I take when I'm dealing with the onset, you know, of these migraines. And, you know, when you're taking that medication, you're not probably able to function, not at your appropriate capacity, that you should. And so, you know, there are many other disabilities out there that our military family suffer from other than just PTSD. So for someone to make the assumption that all persons within the military suffer PTSD, that is, you know, that is just wrong within itself. And so, again, that's where I try to make sure that I'm doing everything I can to educate individuals. I do a lot of things outside my job. I've been a long-term volunteer with the Wounded Warrior Project. I've been with USO right at a little bit over 20 plus years. And so I do things strategically just to make sure that I stay abreast of these type of things. And this is something that I wish to challenge our, you know, fellow talent acquisition, you know, demographics to do the same as well.
Exactly. Excellent. Yeah. So can you talk, we have just about two more minutes or so before we go to break, but can you talk a little bit about sort of that dichotomy? You had mentioned this term, dichotomy of cultural indoctrination, and just sort of looking at one of the recurring problems in corporate America, just in general, is discrimination and racism. So can you talk a little bit about how that actually impacts the military on top of everything that you just described?
Wow. You know, that is a loaded question. And one of the clear examples that stand out with me is when I was with Microsoft, I had a fellow colleague. He had served in the United States Air Force, and we was all just kind of having a general conversation with some people, nothing non-work related. And anyway, the individual automatically assumed that he was what they call a foot soldier, meaning he was just out on the field. He didn't do anything. But in actuality, this individual had actually promoted and worked his way up the ranks. And, you know, he was actually, you know, more on a higher end of the totem pole. So you have those type of assumptions that's equally made, you know, within the military demographic. And that's what I meant when I say you got that good old boy, you know, mindset, that dichotomy that exists, especially oftentimes more so when it comes to persons of color. People often assume that the best that a person of color can do in the military is be what they call, you know, a foot soldier, you know, or a grunt, you know, those are, you know, kind of like common or civilian terms that's used, but they're all the time not the most appropriate, and it's definitely not complimentary, you know, when you say it in that regard.
Or accurate.
Excellent. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue along those lines, and then we'll dig a little bit into diversity, equity, inclusion, and that work that you do from that military perspective.
Sure.
Are you wanting more for your life? Are you ready to create your life with confidence and contribution? We all have a gift to give to the world. Becoming you is that gift. In order to truly live your life, you have to become you on purpose and with intention. Leah Rowling supports you in becoming you using the B method, consistently producing results for hundreds of entrepreneurs and business owners. For more information, visit leahrowling.com.
Have you heard about shifting the collective vibration and consciousness on the planet? Join me, Kimberly Barrett, on the Sharing Love and Light show every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern at transformationtalkradio.com to explore the depth of vibration and consciousness on our planet and learn how you can shine your love and light. To learn more, visit sharingloveandlightshow.com.
On the Spiritual Freedom Show, you will hear the voice of an extraterrestrial master speaking through my teacher, Dr. George King, as it was recorded over 60 years ago. I'm Richard Lawrence, and on this podcast, I bring you the 9 freedoms, which I believe to be the greatest wisdom on earth, with practical ways to give global service and attain enlightenment.
Boy, does this feel like good times today. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. I love it. This is a show that's going to invite all of you to open up your heart, because it's about dreams coming true. There's a road we get to take as we craft out and we lay a course that's in service of so many others. Sometimes the universe, God, whatever you believe in, have you ever wondered why, but better than why, or how the universe knows how to line things up in a way that gets you ready for the most expansive part of who you're going to become? This is the time to change. And gratitude, leading with love, opens up more expansive possibilities than you can imagine. Crust busting your way to an awesome life.
I want to thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
So welcome back. You're listening to Inflection Point Podcast on Transformation Talk Radio. And our topic for today is fighting for freedom denied, military transitions. And we've been pondering the question, how do discriminatory employment practices impact the transition from the military into the civilian sector? And we have J.K. Bridges, expert, who has been sharing her experiences and expertise with us. So JK, if you could just kind of jump into what you were, we were talking about the issue of racism and discrimination from that perspective, and you were sharing a little bit. So if you could finish out that, and then we'll move on from there.
Sure. So I was essentially saying that, you know, regrettably, the military is no exception. You know, it's an institution where systemic racism and biases clearly exist. But it's unfortunate that now those same individuals, you know, persons of color, you know, the Latino community, you know, even persons of the Pride community, the LGBTIQ community, you know, when they come out of the military, you know, now they have to encounter a lot of those same biases, but now they're encountering it on a more civilian scale. And sadly, you know, when you're in the civilian sector, a lot of times that bias and that systemic racism is a lot more visible, you know, than what it is in the military. And not that that's an excuse for the military, but just imagine the shock and the trauma that that can send, you know, these individuals through. And so if you really think about it, the military demographic is one of the more higher demographics that is of the unemployed. And it really should not be that way. Now, I would be the first to say, can we hire every single person, you know, that's in the military? Probably not, because there are some people that don't want to even have anything to do, you know, with the government. Like I'm in the federal space with what I do in corporate recruiting. And so there have been times that I've reached out and I've engaged with persons of the military community, but they've had such bad experiences, not only in the military, but within the civilian sector, that now their attitude and mentality is, I don't ever want to have anything to do with the federal government ever again. And so a lot of them rather just go into something, you know, totally different, non-government related. And that's all the way from state government to city government, county government, and definitely for federal government, you know, again, a lot of them just don't want to have anything to do with it because they have been, you know, treated so poorly and so underappreciated that they just choose not to even delve into that arena again. And so for me, I just wish to implore to, you know, our listening audience that if you are in a position of authority, if you are in a position, you know, of talent acquisition and human resources, if someone within the military community, and I've already educated you of the 3 demographics that constitute military, if someone in that demographic, you know, reaches out to you, you know, please, I urge you, you know, be a little bit more sensitive to them reaching out, because I can guarantee you that if they're reaching out to you, you're probably what they're perceiving as their last resort. You know, they've probably reached out to so many others that, you know, everybody else have turned their backs on them. And I just think it is utmost behooving that for these individuals that have laid their lives on the line for us. And then now we as a society have to come back and treat them in such a, you know, disrespectful way. I think that's the least that we can do to them is give them a little bit of our time. Yes. So what if it takes 5 or 10 minutes more of your time? It's a conversation. That's what you're paid to do. So, you know, for me, anytime I reach out to someone on LinkedIn, I always leave my digital, you know, business card, which has my name, my title, my phone number, my email, you know, et cetera. Because that's what my job is paying me to do, to network. And then I'm just a natural networker by design anyway.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Mavis, did you have a question?
I just, questions and a thought. I was just thinking about how many perceptions and assumptions are involved in this whole ecosystem.
Sad but true.
I would have thought that a military, ex-military person would be a great hire because of the discipline.
Right.
You know, probably because of my background in banking or something. And I'm thinking about the perceptions of the spouses and so on. And it's old school. I remember, you know, stay-at-home wives not being able to get a job because of the time frame thing. But
of course,
again, there's all these assumptions around each person. And then, you know, I think I mentioned to you that my nephew-in-law just left the military. Uh-huh. And I called him quick before this talk to see what had happened to him. I helped him write his resume. I pumped him because, yeah, it was a tough time. But I said, oh, I wish you could have met this lady, you know, 6 months ago. And I said, did you encounter any, you know, discrimination in that regard? And he said, I don't know. No one ever called me back.
Mm. Oh, wow. How unfortunate.
Yeah. Wow. So when he went to these, you know, private organizations that were right up his alley, he did not get return calls. He finally networked with someone he knew, and he's happy and all that. But, you know, I just thought, isn't that strange that no one reached, even have the courtesy for a veteran to reply?
Right.
You know,
right.
Are we that we treat our veterans that way?
No. So that was, you know, his story, Mavis, is a common one. And I've heard it from so many aspects. And for me, you know, I have a deep rooted passion when it comes to the military. I grew up as an Army brat. My father, like my husband, served, you know, his country faithfully for 30 odd years. He's of the Vietnam, you know, veteran era, you know. And then again, like I said, I'm a military spouse. I got brothers that served in the in the military. I got one sister that served in the military. So I come from a very strong and indoctrinated military family. And I myself will probably be the most passionate non-serving military person that you will ever meet, because I always desired to join the military, but regrettably I was born with a congenital heart condition. So because of that, I was not medically, you know, eligible to join the military, but I actually tried on 3 separate occasions. You know, that's how loyal, you know, and how devoted that I truly wanted to, you know, join and give my service, you know, to our country. But for me, once I recognized that that was not an option for me to serve in that capacity, I chose to serve in a different capacity. And that is why I have always, you know, done all of the volunteer work, you know, that I have done with the 2 different aforementioned organizations, you know, the Wounded Warrior Project and the USO. And then in addition to that, you know, I just do a lot of things on my own in terms such as what we're doing now, speaking about this kind of stuff, because sadly, these are a lot of the things that no one ever wants told.
But I had no idea this was going on.
Right. Yes.
It's more rampant than what people wish to give attention to. And, you know, I remember seeing something probably a few months back on LinkedIn where this young lady, someone had made a post about Amazon, and they was talking about how Amazon has literally taken over for hiring veterans. Now, I will say this. I have to raise my hand and tilt my head and give utmost kudos to Amazon, because Amazon has done an amazing job of hiring military personnel, all the way from veterans to transitioning military personnel, and definitely even military spouses. Even I myself, I've gone through a couple of different interview phases, never got hired with them, but I went through it over the years. But at least I can say they considered me. They looked at me as a serious candidate, where there were other companies that did not do that. And so I commend Amazon for the platform that they have designed, because they have a team that is wholly dedicated specifically to the military community. And they tend to hire military persons in the appropriate capacities, such that when they're doing military recruitment and military sourcing, that they now have people that, such as myself, that knows how to talk the talk and walk the walk when you're amongst that demographic. And that is where so many other companies are falling short. And so I think if many of them were to take note from Amazon and kind of build their platform similar to what Amazon has done, then they too could be equally just as successful.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. Nice. So you mentioned the Wounded Warrior Project more than one time. So I just wanted to take it a minute or so just to talk about that, because when I think about people in the military, it just seems to me that, and I have a number of people in my family who have been in the military, but it just seems to me that in that transition phase, if you add on top of that the fact that so many soldiers come home wounded, with visible wounds, physical wounds, emotional wounds, and all of that. And so everything that we've been talking about is obviously are issues. But then when you add on top of that the fact that some are coming home with limbs missing, you know, just different things like that. And that also adding to the stress of making that transition. So if you could take a minute or so and just talk about that. And then I want to delve more into the diversity, equity, and inclusion aspect of your work specifically.
Right. The reason that you hear me making reference to the Wounded Warrior Project is that I admire them heavily for the fact that they have, especially in the last 15 years or so, they have really been very vigilant in reaching out to various employers to push and advocate for the hiring of persons of disabilities. Because like you've already stated, Anita, there are many of these military personnel, you know, once they come home and they get out of the military, you know, they do have the missing arms or the missing leg, you know, or even other injuries that, you know, they might even have their limbs, but they can have other things that is non-visible to the eye that still constitutes as a disability, you know. For instance, there could be individuals that have been exposed to certain gases, and now it has resulted in him or her having respiratory issues. And that was a reason where they would receive what's called a medical retirement. So that is now defined as a disability, because they now have what's called a military disability rating, which, you know, under federal law, now constitute them as being a person of disabilities. And so just even in that regard, you know, employers must become more cognizant of these type of injuries. You know, I've seen it so many times. I'll be in a parking lot and I happen to overhear persons talking, and I'll see a person get out and I recognize the plates, you know, it's disabled veteran plates on the car. And of course the person get out and from appearances, they got both arms, both legs, but we don't know what else is going on with that person. Mm-hmm. You know, that person could be then suffered some type of major head injury. Mm-hmm. You know, that person could have something going on with their respiratory. That person could be then, you know, they may have, could be wearing a colostomy bag underneath his or her clothes because of a major injury that they sustained within the military. So it's so many hurtful assumptions that is made when it comes to our military demographic. But equally, that's where we in talent acquisition, you know, I think it's good for us to seek out persons of disabilities, because guess what? They still have much to offer. They are, at the end of the day, they are individuals that's talented. They are individuals that's smart. They are individuals that is unique within their own. They are individuals that bring a plethora of talent and experience. We cannot ignore just because they are a person of a disability that they do not have experience.
They've given so much.
And the abilities that they still have, and that have even advanced with those abilities because of the disability.
For sure.
They're not looking beyond that disability in order to see all of the abilities and experience that has been accumulated.
Oh, absolutely. And if it's worth anything, what a lot of employers don't realize is that they're practically leaving money on the table. You know, the other thing, I'm going to go back to Amazon because I think Amazon is a great example. But a few years ago, you know, a lot of people was criticizing Jeff Bezos for them basically paying zero taxes. You know, well, it wasn't for other things. It was because of the vast number of tax breaks that they was able to get for hiring military personnel. So if other employers was to educate themselves properly behind this, they would see that the federal government has money set aside where you get major tax breaks for hiring a person that's, from the military demographic, all the way from a military spouse to, you know, and yes, whether individuals realize it or not, let me just throw this in there. A military spouse is identified as a veteran. We are protected by a federal statute. We are indeed a veteran, hence the term dependent veteran. That is what we're known as. So for individuals, you know, and when I say individuals, I'm speaking to those that's within the talent acquisition community. These are the things that they need to make sure that they fully understand and not put themselves in a position where they could, not only they themselves could be subject to a civil liability, but their employer that they're representing.
Excellent. Excellent. So I'd like to read a quote that I found. This was the Department of Defense Policies Against Discrimination, right? And this was the first DOD Human Goals Charter that was issued in 1969.
Oh,
and
wow.
This is what this is one statement that I pulled out of that, and this is connected to the mission.
Okay.
Our nation was founded on the principle that each individual has infinite dignity and worth. The Department of Defense must always be guided by this principle. In all that we do, we must show respect for service members, civilian employees, and family members, recognizing their individual needs, aspirations, and capabilities. So this statement was written in 1969. So what I'd like, JK, is if you could comment on that statement within the context of how we are operating today and why diversity, equity, and inclusion is still just as important, whether we're talking the military or we're talking civilian life, because here you are a DEI champion, but you're also a champion for military, military working in civilian sectors and all of that. So if you can make that connection.
Well, you know, even though I'm a little bit rusty, I am familiar with that you just read. And the reason that the federal government implemented that policy was just for the very thing that we're talking about right now, is to ensure that individuals that is serving in the military is treated fairly and with utmost respect and consideration. Hence the term consideration. Now, when you break off from that, you also have their families, meaning the military family, their dependents, the spouses, things of that nature. And so when you think about that, that definitely puts us in a situation where now here we are, 45, to 50 years later, or right at that marker rather, where we're still having to educate ourselves on these things that is crucial to securing proper employment, of that demographic, the military demographic, their spouses, but equally making sure that we're safeguarding their civil rights, their civil liberties. Mm-hmm. And that's where the DE&I piece comes into place. Mm-hmm. For example, I was a tech recruiter right at almost 9 years. And what a lot of people don't realize is that within the tech community, women, females make up just a tad bit over 2% of the entire population of the tech community. Now think about that. We're just a tad bit over 2%. But now if you throw in what's called disproportionate communities, or I'm sorry, disproportionate persons, meaning persons of color, the Latin community, Asians, you know, females, mm-hmm. now that number gets even smaller. Mm-hmm. And so again, without having a proper and solid DE&I platform, those demographics will always continue to be underserved and underrepresented. Mm-hmm. And that's where we as persons within the talent acquisition community, we have to come in and make sure that we're remaining vigilant in doing these things. Mm-hmm. You know, the company that I was with prior to coming aboard here at Case, they had a DE&I platform, but it really was not very visible until I came aboard. And I was able to, you know, pitch to our, you know, executive management as well as our board of directors and basically educate them. I mean, I literally did, you know, have conversations kind of like what we're having right now, but was able to speak to them from a standpoint and share with them the advantage of us being a lot more visible in the different communities in which we serve, you know, to let them know that, yes, we want to hire persons of immense talents. And, you know, we're equally willing to look at disproportionate communities. And so that these are the type of things that we have to do. And equally, I carry on that same mindset even today in regard to what I do here within the Providencia Group and Case Companies. You know, I make sure that I'm hyper, you know, visible on LinkedIn. I join numerous groups and organizations. I go out, I do a lot of public speaking, both on behalf of the company, as well as things I do independently, you know, that in turn benefits me as well as benefits my employer. Because you have some people that have the mindset to say, oh, well, you know, if my employer not telling me to do it, then I'm not going to do it. But sometimes we have to educate our employers. And I'm notorious for doing that.
I have no doubt. That's wonderful. That's exactly what's needed.
You know, yes.
It is the education to them at those levels.
Wow. Yeah, go
ahead, Anita.
What, did you have a question? You had a question, Mavis, you wanted to ask?
Well, just a statement, really. I have never heard of a person like you, JK, with particular approach to the market. Not like I've been everywhere and done everything, but this seems like such an underserved market. The idea, you know, I was thinking about veterans being homeless. There's no reason that veterans shouldn't be welcomed back with honor, with a home, with a job, with a home loan, the whole
thing.
So I'm passing your name out.
Feel free, please do. Yeah. And you know, and I'm always happy, you know, to help individuals and to your listening audience. I don't want anyone to think that if they're not military affiliated, that I would not be willing to help them. I'm equally willing to help, you know, anyone. But I will admit my strongest passion is with our military family for all the aforementioned reasons. But naturally, if anyone reach out to me, feel free. I do not mind, Mavis. Give my information out. People can follow me on LinkedIn. I would say connect with me on LinkedIn, but I've already maxed out my maximum number of connections a little bit over 3 years ago. So the best that they can do is follow me on LinkedIn under JK Bridges. Look for the name of Case Company, and that will be me. And like I said, please, you know, follow me. I'm happy to respond to people when they send me emails or, you know, direct messages. And whatever I can do for them, I'm always happy to do so. And I get it. Would I love for them to come and employ here with us within Providencia and Case Company or Case Federal? Of course I would, you know, but I also fully recognize that not everyone is going to be able to employ with us, just like everyone is not going to be able to employ with Apple or Google or Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. And I say all that to say, I think one of the things, and this is kind of talking to our military audience, is that sometimes individuals do have this notion in their head that, oh, I'm military and they just need to hire me. No, it takes a little bit more than that. So now I'm going to talk to that side of things. It does take a little bit more than just being part of the military. You know, there's some homework that they themselves have to do also. In other words, making sure you've properly educated yourself on the company or companies that you are desiring to employ with. What is their culture like? Are they a military friendly company, you know, things of that nature, because if they're not a military friendly company, you can easily tell that by the things that's on their, you know, public posts, you know, their different social media platforms, you know, even the different things that that's out there, you know, just doing your own research. And then Glassdoor has a plethora of reviews on different companies that is veteran and military friendly. So when people don't properly educate themselves, that is the other thing. The second thing that I strongly emphasize to our military, especially our military demographic, is making sure that you have a resume. And I know some people say, oh, well, you know, I don't see the point of having a resume this, that way or the other. Yes, your resume does make a difference, because here's why. Your resume is what gets you recognized. The resume is what gets your foot in the door. The interview, that's where you sell yourself. The interview is what gets you the job. Now, sadly, a lot of people, the resume is doing what it needs to do. And I tell people all the time, if you're getting the callbacks, if we as recruiters, if we are calling you, your resume is fine. But if it goes no further than that, then you're the problem. And when I say you're the problem, meaning you have not properly prepared yourself for that interview. You have not educated yourself on the background and the depths of what that job is, what all it entails, and you're not good at interviewing. And see, a lot of people think that they can just go in and wing it. And trust me, someone such as myself that's been in the industry 27, soon to be 28 years come October, I can tell if somebody is winging it in an interview or not versus those that have truly done their homework and knows how to sufficiently answer those questions. So
JK, we are like totally and completely out of time at this point. And I just wanted to read this one final quote before we totally kick off the platform. So this is a quote that I found. On the battlefield, the military pledges to leave no soldier behind. As a nation, let it be our pledge that when they return home, we leave no veteran behind. And this was Dan Lipinski, an American politician and a political scientist. So I just want to thank you so much for being here. This was like so much information. Yes. And I just thank you again. And for all of our listeners, I thank you. And we'll see you next time on Inflection.
Thank you for listening to Inflection Point Podcast, where our mantra is cultivating change from the inside out. The journey towards anti-racism and social change doesn't stop here. Truth, reconciliation, and healing come from ongoing, open, honest, and deliberate conversations. Continue to dive in and deconstruct your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs as we band together to manifest social change. Tune in to Inflection Point Podcast every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, here on TransformationTalkRadio.com for more conversations about how we can cultivate change from the inside out.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.